Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. of Middle America and all the ships at sea. This is Ian Punnett again for another night on Coast to Coast AM. And to the hostile alien armies floating silently behind their cloaking devices just outside of Earth's atmosphere, remember to eat the Canadians first. And for good reason, too. This is that time of year when you could probably get away with it in Roswell, New Mexico. So, you know, start north. There were actual aliens walking around Roswell. They might be able to blend in really well with the Halloween festivities that are coming up. We'll talk more about that coming up in just a second. And we'll go around the horn to a couple of places that are celebrating Halloween on the way this Wednesday. Of course, George will have a terrific Wednesday night Halloween show, but we'll also talk with J.W. Ocker, who's the author of A Season with the Witch. And it's a whole book about the magic and mayhem of Halloween in Salem, Massachusetts. You might remember a show we did a couple of months ago about the Salem witch trials and how historians have been changing their views on who were the victims, or rather whether they were like really that much of a victim. I mean, it was fascinating. Go back if you're a member of Coast Insider and listen for it. But coming up next hour, this is another sort of historical trip I think you're just going to love. Along the rails of America, the man from the train, discovering America's most elusive serial killer. Oh, this is a great story. You'll love hearing about it with Bill James, who is a writer not just of general interest books like that, but also he's a sports writer in Boston. And he was, of course, following very closely what happened tonight in Los Angeles. We are not competing against the extended game that the Dodgers ended up playing last night. It was like a doubleheader rolled up into one single game. But tonight, a little different. Both Sox lead the series now 3-1. The Dodgers will get another shot at it coming up tomorrow night to send the series back to Boston 3-2. But let me just say, if it hadn't been for that error in the top of the, 13th or bottom of the 13th? Yeah. This would all be over now. Boston would be going home with a trophy. But the game's over. And for those of you that missed the first 2 hours of last night's show because you were following the game, you should, too, also go back and listen to it through Coast Insider. It was really interesting. And I was just afraid that the guest, Michael Gillen, a science writer, former professor at Harvard, and a guy who used to be on Good Morning America and regularly appear on ABC shows, he probably could have gotten a bigger audience had it not been for that exciting World Series game. So it's worth catching if you can, because he talks a lot about the future, the near future, that is to say the frontier where science currently sits on, in the end of life as we know it, how things are changing, what we should be very aware of, what should scare us very much. And it was a terrific show, and I was very grateful for him. And then some fun open lines afterward. But I can't go on any further without mentioning how sad I know I am and all of you listening are for the mass shooting that happened this morning in Pittsburgh at the Tree of Life Synagogue. This is a tragedy we should all feel, especially on a Sabbath. This should never have happened, and we need to work together to try to prevent that type of senseless death from happening again. I'm going to save some words on that for the beginning of next hour, because I just feel like saying them. And we've got a lot of fun stuff to get to coming up this hour to start the show, because it's going to be Halloween on the way, so we're going to have to walk that fine line between being in the spirit of what is a great traditional sort of, you know, fall experience for everybody of every age in America, and being mindful that there's still some people we should be holding in prayer this morning who are either fighting for their life or fighting to go on with life, having lost somebody that they dearly loved. So please keep that in mind as we go forward. We're not forgetting them. We're just going to hold a thought on that until next hour. And in the meantime, we'll tell you about some very important news going on. You might be able to find out more on at coasttocoastam.com. Next, this is Ian Punnett on Coast to Coast AM. Big stories to get to before we get started on Coast to Coast AM, but One of those is one from behind the scenes. So I'll out the guy who's been one of the online producers of the show for a very long time, 8 years. Nathan Staten is in the process of producing his last, running the board for his last show on Coast to Coast AM, at least for a while. Nathan, I'm going to force you to turn your mic on because I wanted you to know, and I wanted everybody to know, as I told you, just how valuable you've been to the Coast to Coast team. And when I came back to doing Coast to Coast, it was such a soft landing knowing that you were still there to run the board for me. And I've always been grateful for all the great work that you've done for me and George and all the other hosts over the years on Coast to Coast.
You ask me to turn my mic on and you leave me speechless at the same time.
Then I'm going to make you explain to everybody why you would leave such an amazing opportunity here at Coast to Coast, and that is to work with horses, which is what not a lot of people would have guessed. So
yeah, a lot of people were scratching their head at that.
You're going to be a farrier.
I am. I'm going to be a farrier. Learn how to make shoes, put shoes on to horses, treat them if they have any problems in their feet. And because if you don't have a good horse hoof, you don't have a horse.
No. You know, so I just you've been, you know, right there, just a right hand all along for me and for other people. And I know it wasn't an easy decision to leave Coast, and there's always a possibility you could come back. But for the time being, you're off to take a program to pass a program of certification to begin your career as a horse chiropodist, basically, right? A horse podiatrist.
Yes. And I'm kind of stepping back a few centuries. Going to become a blacksmith, learn how to do all
You are going to learn how to become a blacksmith to make horseshoes.
Absolutely. I'll be working in the forge and crafting the shoe.
That's so cool.
How to steel, aluminum.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so when do you start the program?
I actually leave in the morning. I get off here at 2 a.m. I have to be on the road by 6 a.m. to check into the dorm tomorrow by 2.
You're a freshman again.
Yep, all over, kicking on, you know, putting on some new shoes and hitting the road.
I love that. Human shoes this time. But yes. So you've been an actor. You've been trying to break into Hollywood. You're originally from Kentucky. You grew up around horses.
Yes.
So in a way, you're kind of gone 360 back to being raised near Churchill Downs.
Yeah, it's really weird. But it's a great feeling. And yeah, I came out here to do the acting. I gave it a shot. My passion kind of fell out of that. So now this has arisen, and I'm jumping on it and going.
Totally love this. Well, there's a chance, of course, that you could end up, you know, working around some of the racetracks around Los Angeles and then still coming back and doing, you know, your board work here for us on Coast to Coast. And by that, I mean B-O-A-R-D as opposed to B-O-R-E-D, at least I hope.
That would be my dream, yes.
But you've been out of the gate with us. You've had a strong finish. You came, you know, out of the clubhouse turn and you won the race here. You far ahead of all of the producers with whom I have worked on the board. You know, even Dan Galante's terrific. I don't mean him, but I just mean I've seen a lot of part-time people come and go. You were the best. You won that race.
I'm just
grateful that you've stuck it out there as long as you have, and we look forward to getting you back.
Thank you, sir. And I would honor to be back, so thank you.
Now, don't screw anything up on the show and then go out like on a bad note.
No. I'm on it tonight. Don't worry. It's not one of those last nights. Who cares what's going on?
Start drinking halfway through.
No, you're cool. We'll be here.
Okay. All right. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Nathan. It was great working with you. So a couple of news stories to get to this morning. I don't know if you heard, but if you go to coasttocoastam.com, there's a great piece about the experiments that inspired Frankenstein. So as you're heading into the holiday weekend and getting up to Halloween on the way, it's a fun story to read because it goes to show you the science behind what was essentially a science fiction story. Now, people don't think of Frankenstein as science fiction. That, you know, sometimes it's thought of as like a big morality play. But it really is, in many respects, one of the first major big-selling science fiction works. And that's because if you think about the, like iRobot, both the Asimov version and then the iRobot that came before Asimov, they are all kind of play on the same themes that that are explored in Frankenstein, between, you know, the creator and the creation. And in fact, in that very first version of iRobot, before the Asimov version of iRobot, the robot that is created in the very first version of iRobot, which was in the like 1930s, sits down and reads Frankenstein and then has a better understanding of life afterward. Anyway, the experiments that inspired Frankenstein are up at coasttocoastam.com. It's a great story to read. And also this one, too, from The Sun, about a cover-up that may have been exposed, Google Earth blind spot over the experimental military base may be where U.S. government hides crashed UFOs. That, according to a defense insider. You'll see more about that, about the Tonopah test range in Nevada, and what they have recently uncovered. But if they did, well, then, you know, it would become the new Roswell. I'm kind of happy with the old Roswell, and I'm very grateful that we have a chance to talk to Juanita Jennings, who joins us on the phone on Coast to Coast AM. Good evening, Juanita.
Good evening.
So Juanita is the director of public affairs for Roswell, and she promotes Roswell as a travel and you know, as a professional opportunity, and people move to Roswell all the time. But this is that time of year where you get a lot of tourists who come in for the Halloween festivities. So I just wanted to ask you what your plans were for Halloween. What do you do if Roswell's kind of Halloween all year long, in a way, for some people, with the discussion of aliens and invading armies and all of that? If it's a Halloween all year long, what do you do special for Halloween?
Most people go out to Graves Farm, which is a local farm and ranch community just about 7 miles out of town, where they participate in the corn maze. The Graves family put the corn maze together like the hieroglyphics that were supposedly on the UFO spaceship that landed in 1947. They change it every single year, and it's just a great opportunity for people to go out and really try to experience, you know, that haunted feeling of getting lost in a field like the UFO crashed in 1947. Other people go out to Bottomless Lake State Park, which again has a mystery of being bottomless, and it is out 10 miles from Roswell. Beautiful lake, great place to RV camp and things like that. But again, more of the stars and the telescopes, and people get dressed up and they feel that they become one, or they may come down. And, you know, it's just that theory of there is something here that landed, and they're trying to connect with them, especially around Halloween and during the UFO festival in July.
Okay. So I'll be traveling through Roswell. I'm moving coming up in a couple of weeks, and I'll be driving up through Roswell on my way to my new position. I'll be teaching at Kansas State, and my younger son and I had always wanted to go to Roswell, right? So we mapped it out from Phoenix, even though we have to go a little bit out of our way to dip down to Roswell before we come back up again. It seemed totally worth it to us just to be able to see it. But how much can people tour when they're out there? If anybody were interested in being able to go to the crash site, or to go to any of the other locations that are linked to the famous story of the crash in Roswell, what can they do?
So they can go to the Roswell International UFO Museum and Research Center, which is a great opportunity to really dive into the historical and the research part of the crash. Definitely would check out the library for those who are really the seekers in Do You Believe? In addition to that, we have a UFO tour that is done by a local researcher. He's been doing research on the crash and UFOs for over 20 plus years, and he will take you to the exact locations of the timing of the incident. And on top of that, during the festival, not next week, but during the festival, for the first time last year, the Bogle family, where the crash occurred allegedly, they will take you out to the crash site where Mac Brazel's ranch house is still kind of in place, and you can see where the crater landed in the land. And so those are just a couple of things that I would definitely recommend that people check out and, you know, search for the truth themselves.
Okay. So, Juanita, use the word allegedly in there, which makes me suspect you're not a true believer of what happened. Do you know something we don't know?
I do believe there are some people who still are kind of on the fence. And so we invite people to come and find out for themselves. We, you know, there's a lot of research. There's a lot of local people here that people can talk to. When you go into the UFO museum, the locals know who the tourists are because you will get this sticker, and you will come and walk down our main street and go into Area 51, which is a great store. Bring your camera, take pictures. Stop in the Roswell Visitor Center. We have two amazing aliens that we decorate for each holiday, especially now for Halloween. Misty puts on a big fall festival with our police officers and things like that for the community. But they're about 6 foot aliens, and people love to take pictures with them. And you'll hear the story of, you know, our employee of the month, his name is Bob, and Marv, the alien. And, you know, people really come here searching for the truth. Okay. And we as locals, we don't want to say one way or the other. We want them to figure it out for themselves and do the research.
Well, that'd be great. Thank you. I appreciate that. Let me ask you, how many people show up every year in Roswell for the Roswell Festival, for the crash festival that happens in the summer, the UFO days?
So our population has doubled in size. We're a town about 48,000, and especially on the big anniversaries of the festival, you know, we've hit close to doubling our size. On average per year for tourism, we see a little over 230,000 visitors that come to the UFO Museum and Research Center.
Pretty good. Pretty good. And pretty close to what they get in Salem, Massachusetts. And so I'll bring in our next guest next. But thank you, Juanita. And if I'm driving through town, I get a chance, I'll say hello. Okay?
Yes, please do. Thank you.
Juanita Jennings is the director of tourism or public affairs in Roswell, New Mexico. A Season with the Witch, J.W. Ocker. The subtitle is The Magic and Mayhem of Halloween in Salem, Massachusetts. J.W., let me just tell you, very funny book. You have a great sense of humor. Really enjoy all the sort of a comic asides on a serious subject because... And we'll get to this in a second. This is a very unusual place in America, but it has an even more extraordinary place in the timeline of American history. But I thought it was interesting. You mentioned that in Salem, Massachusetts, they do about 250,000 people that come to visit during the month of October. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's exactly about right. They're a city of about 40,000 usually. And on Halloween, just Halloween itself, it's about 100,000 people come. And then over the course of the month, it's in the 250,000. So it's a massive amount of people for that small city to have within its borders.
Well, I love this idea. So this is one of my favorite kind of books. It's a deep drill down on it's on a narrow subject, but you picked Halloween in Salem as the subject. So it sort of, you use that as a sort of a lens on all of what happened and the implications of the Salem witch trials. But it's really informative. And we just did a guest a couple of weeks ago about on the popular opinion on how historians have been shifting their views on Salem. And I learned a lot then too, but we'll learn a little bit more tonight. For example, I didn't realize that that there are other places around the world outside of Salem that had massive hangings and burnings of witches before Salem, Massachusetts did.
Yeah, I always try to tell people that Salem wasn't the first ever witch trial, wasn't the last, wasn't the witch trial to end all witch trials, wasn't the biggest, wasn't the strangest, wasn't, you know, there are, you know, the first witch trial in America that yielded a victim was in Connecticut. And in Europe, they're reaching like thousands of victims over the course of centuries.
But we don't really hear about that, which is really, I mean, I know that there are some festivals in Europe that keep that alive, but still, that's an extraordinary number of witches killed.
It is, and it's really a problem today, even in the lesser developed countries. There's still witches people being executed for being witches. But the strange thing about that to me, of course, is that of all the cities on the planet that have had this problem, which is pretty much every city on the planet, there's only one witch city, and that's Salem, Massachusetts.
That's Witch City, USA. So we'll get to that. A Season with the Witch. We'll talk a little bit more about Salem and Salem at Halloween on the way. I like the Rob Zombie story in there in the book, too. And then coming up next hour on Coast to Coast AM, a truly amazing saga of the most elusive serial killer in American history, and you've never heard of that either. And that's coming up next hour on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So, playing that bumper on purpose, it doesn't sound like it would be a Halloween bumper, but it is for anybody who's seen the Netflix series The Haunting of Hill House, because that's been the theme. They play as kind of a slowed-down, spooky version of it in the promos. Let me tell you, what a great show that was. Stephen King praised it. It's been getting, you know, terrific reviews from every corner, and it deserves it. It's just a great, great story, and it's told really well. It has nothing to do with the book, right? It has very little to do with any of the other versions of The Haunting of Hill House that I've ever seen. I think I've seen every version they've ever made, even the bootleg versions where they slightly changed the title. But it was great. And I was skeptical of it going into it, and I wasn't really ready to commit to 10 episodes. I had a lot of moving stuff to do, but it's that good. So if you're looking for something to be a little bit spooky, more in the area of terror than horror, very suspenseful, The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix is just one of the rare Netflix series that lives up to all of its billing. I think everybody I've talked to who watched it has loved it. I'll just tell you that much. And I think what's even cooler, like maybe the thing that it has the most in common with the original book and perhaps the original British version of the movie, is that they make a point to do a lot of stuff off, just slightly off camera. It's a little bit out of frame. So there's plenty to, you know, give you booze and chills, but I mean, there were some moments there where some of the coolest stuff you can't see. And that's what it was like in the first one. I remember that as a kid when I went to go see it. It was like I couldn't see it, but it almost scared me more than I couldn't see it. And I don't know if I could have handled it if I had seen it. So take a look for that, and you're going to enjoy that for Halloween. You're going to enjoy this show, too, for Halloween, A Season with the Witch. J.W. Ocker continues in just a moment in the top of the hour. The Man from the Train, Discovering America's Most Elusive Serial Killer on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So, J.W. Ocker, author of A Season with the Witch, I just had to look up some of those stats that we had mentioned more vaguely. 2011, Vardo, Norway, erected a memorial to the 91 victims of 17th century witch hunt. Lancashire, England, long ago turned its Pendle Witches incident, in which 10 people were hanged in 1612, into a tourist draw. In Sweden, there's a witch memorial for the more than 70 victims who were beheaded and burned in 1675. In Germany, a staggering 450 victims in the late 1500s and early 1600s. In Spain, a whole museum dedicated to the witch trials, in which some 7,000 people were accused. And that's just some of them, and not even all that happened in America. But it's Salem that sticks out. And so why do you conclude Salem, Massachusetts has become so synonymous with the craft?
It's really a mystery, honestly. Even that's one of the big questions I had going through the book. And I think it's a combination of probably two dozen different factors, honestly, that gets Salem as witch city. One of which, of course, is that we're, you know, it's in the United States of America, and the U.S. kind of invented marketing. So
yeah,
that's a big part of it. But I mean, not a big part of it. That's a small part of it. But there's about a dozen other reasons why kind of Salem grabbed onto that moniker and kind of held onto it, you know, over the course of the past two centuries.
But it's kind of a, you know, it's a moniker of shame. right? I mean, it's not, that's not usually what a town holds on to. You know, the, even, you know, it's we just talked to somebody from Roswell, and that, that was an incident that was, that happened there, but, and they take advantage of it for, you know, tourism purposes and for whatever other reason they want. But it's like usually for, you don't hear about Chicago celebrating the fact that it was the home of that crazy serial killer during the famous World's Exposition, right? You don't, most cities don't go out of their way to put up signs and go, it happened here, folks.
Right. No, I think that's true. I think two explanations of that. One is that, you know, the tragedy in Salem itself was basically just the court happened in Salem, right? It was the civic part of the trials.
Right.
The actual family members and the, you know, the people who would really bear that shame over the course of generations were around Salem. The actual hysteria started next door in what's now Danvers, and was at the time Salem Village. So Salem itself doesn't really have a kind of a generational connection to it. It was just the site of the civic proceedings. And then on top of that, today, Witch City means way more than just the victims of the witch trials. It means the actual witches that live there today. It means the cartoon witch that kind of represents Halloween, since Salem has kind of become Halloween town as well. So it's the term witch has like a lot of different definitions for Salem today in 2018.
Yeah, I guess, and this is important, and this is a great distinction. Can't help but feel, though, and sometimes I can't get away from just remembering that this really is about innocent victims of murder, that they were executed and they protested their innocence until the end, and there's a whole industry kind of built up around them now.
Yeah, and that is a big point. Dealing with that responsibly is something that Salem has kind of wrestled with for, you know, probably two centuries, and a lot in the past few decades especially, figuring out how to balance, you know, the actual tragedy that's kind of underneath their floorboards, so to speak,
right,
and the part of it that's less connected to the tragedy, that's more just around, you know, a city identity and all these other kind of things that's become in 2018.
Well, I'll go back to my central question then from last half hour, which is then, how do they celebrate Halloween in Salem, Massachusetts?
Oh, with absolute pandemonium. It really is. So they don't celebrate Halloween Day. I mean, they celebrate a season, basically. So they celebrate what's called Haunted Happenings, which technically starts October 1st and ends October 31st, but really is bled over into longer than that. So if you want to experience Salem, don't go in October. Don't go in late October. Go in September or early October or any other time of the year. If you want to visit Salem at Halloween, you're just going to get pandemonium, crowds. It's a lot of fun, but it's definitely a different type of experience from the city of Salem itself.
It's Mardi Gras, basically.
It is. It really is. I mean, you're talking, again, 100,000 people packed into this small downtown of the city. So Salem is a city, but doesn't have high rises. It's not, like, you know, massive. It's a small city. And everything happens within, you know, 5 or 6 blocks. And you have 100,000 people there to party, to wear costumes, to freak each other out, to, you know, go to bars, watch the fireworks, all those kinds of stuff. So you're definitely there for, you know, again, Mardi Gras is a good analogy because you're not really experiencing New Orleans during Mardi Gras. You're experiencing Mardi Gras during Mardi Gras.
And I imagine for a lot of times in October, it's cold as a witch's toque in there. So you're probably not going to get the same festivities that you get in Mardi Gras anyway. But there's probably some amount of alcohol that's consumed during this celebration.
Oh, definitely. Actually, right now we're in the middle of a nor'easter, so that, you know, cuts down on how many people are in Salem right now for Halloween weekend, the last weekend before Halloween.
Right.
But yeah, booze is a part of it. This is with any party.
Okay, so you mentioned haunted happenings, but, I mean, is Salem known for being haunted? Either Salem, what's Danvers, former Salem Village, or Salem? Are there a lot of haunted houses, or are there still visitations from the victims of the original Salem trials?
Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of mythology around that. It's really hard not to have that mythology. Like, if you didn't want it, it would be hard to fight it off because you have, again, everything you need for what's a classic haunting, right? You have innocent victims. You have monsters because the Salem Witch Trials didn't just involve witches in the story. It involves demons and imps and shapeshifters and ghosts. Everything were in the trials. So it's a big monster mash. So you have all those kind of elements, and then you have a city that has, you know, 400 years of history, or 330 years of history. So that is just, you know, a lot of dead people up over the centuries. So yeah, there's all of that kind of stuff happening in Salem. There's ghost tours, there's spooky places, there's, you know, the site of the executions. You have everything you need to build that kind of spooky mythology around the city.
Now, you've been there.
Most cities, I should say.
You've been there, right? You go there.
Oh yeah, all the time, all the time. Yeah. I was just there 2 weekends ago.
So what have you ever gone on and seen anything that was paranormal related that seemed to be still situated in some dimension around Salem?
You know, I haven't, but it's my fault. So I've built a career kind of at visiting strange places, spending the night at abandoned asylums and murder scenes and all kinds of things. And I've never had an experience. So my interest in that is more in the stories themselves. You know, until the day I have an experience, my interest is more just in the stories of it. And Salem is chock full of, like, just really great, spooky, you know, ghostly stories around that. But no, I haven't had anything cool happen to me yet.
What's the best spooky story that post Salem witch trials that you've captured while you've been there?
Well, one of the really creepy ones is one of the Boston Strangler victims happened in Salem. So it has that kind of connection to, like, a real, you know, real actual historical event that then can reverberate and have kind of mythologies around that. Houdini also visited Salem and, like, escaped from one of the jails there. So all these kind of spiritualist kind of, and, you know, macabre kind of events happened in Salem that have nothing to do with the witch trials. So all that kind of stuff kind of feeds into that kind of cauldron of a mythology around Salem.
Yeah, but Houdini was a debunker, right? He wasn't somebody there to celebrate it. He was there somebody to mock these people that were creating these images. So just curious, was there an attempt for him to do, like, bust a seance or something while he was there?
No. The building actually still stands. It's a condominium or apartment complex now, but it used to be the original jail there, the original police station. And he was just there doing one of those things that he used to do when he was in towns performing. He would go to a local police station or somewhere and perform a quick act of, you know, escape as a PR move for his, you know, next big event. So, no, he wasn't down there doing one of his seance busting, but he was down there doing his escape routine.
All right, so you mentioned that there are still witches in Salem. How do they get along with this idea of the celebrating kind of the victimhood of these innocent people who denied that they were witches? How do they play into all of this?
Oh, that's great. It's one of my favorite elements. So Salem is a city in complete conflict at all times between, you know, tourists and historians and visitors and residents and the art museum and the witches. And the witches have this really strange position where they call themselves witches and you know, do a sincere religion around it, but they have to deal with the baggage of, you know, these quote-unquote satanic witches from colonial times that never existed. Plus, they have to deal with this kind of caricature of a witch, this Halloween witch on all the street signs and the sides of the cop cars and the fire engines that are, you know, present witches as monsters, basically, right? You know, twisted noses, moles, green skin. So they have to, like, kind of practice their religion in the midst of all these other kind of versions of witchdom that kind of present them in bad lights. So it is kind of a sore spot for the witch population in Salem that they have to kind of deal with all that other stuff.
Yeah, but it seems like they sort of invite it at the same time.
It helps, because the thing about the witches in Salem is they're not just practicing religion. They're also, you know, business people. They all own shops. They all own, you know, they all have some kind of stake in the economy of Salem.
Yeah, so I was waiting for that part.
So on one hand, it's kind of like a little bit offensive, but on the other hand, if it brings people into your shop, that's a net win for them. So it's again, really complicated to, like, a fascinating degree, their whole economy there.
Yeah, it's a little bit like, come in here, get out of here, come in here, what are you doing? You
know, exactly that.
After they get the money anyway. So then, so you mentioned that you know, because of it being Halloween town, it has then, and because of the shapeshifter aspect of witchcraft as it was perceived back then, that it's also a town where people spend a lot of time with, you know, werewolves and ghosts, and I'm assuming some of the other universal monsters make an appearance in Salem.
Oh, yeah, so that's another aspect. So we talked about it being, you know, witch city. We talked about it being Halloween town. And then also part of that, they're kind of horror land, right? you go down the street of Salem, you're going to see not just witches, witch costumes, you're going to see Frankenstein's monster, and you're going to see Harry Potter and Voldemort, and you're going to see, you know, the Addams Family. All these guys will be there, either right. performing, the actual street performers, or as visitors, to the point that if you're a horror fan, you like horror movies, then Salem, you got to kind of put that on your bucket list, along with, you know, Universal Studios and some others, and Hollywood and those other places you want to go to see horror movie sites. So it's become a mecca for that as well. So it has all of these facets that kind of tie in. All of them are dark, I guess, is the common denominator, but are all different in their own way.
We're talking with J.W. Ocker, A Season with the Witch, the Magic and Mayhem of Halloween in Salem, Massachusetts. And at the same time, I think you left out pirates, right? Because there's a connection for privateers in Salem.
Yeah, so Salem was built on the maritime trade. They were some of the first people not the country at the time, before it was even a country, who mapped out the Asian routes of trade. Like, the first ever millionaire was a Salemite because they were so good at trade overseas. And of course, that comes with pirates. So there's actually a pirate museum there in Salem, along with the other stuff, that you can kind of learn about. You know, they have similar stories to most of the East Coast, where all the kind of pirates hit out here and there. So they have a whole entire pirate chapter of their history as well, which again is another kind of weird layer to the story of Salem that has, like I said earlier, like two dozen layers above just being the site of a trial back in 1692.
It's not just a trial, of course, too, right? It's a series, but those trials, it was so fascinating to talk about it earlier this year, and for people who have Coast Insider, you can go back and listen to that show. It was, it's still very solemn to me that, you know, the innocent people were hanged who were protesting their innocence, and that the people who had confessed to being witches were eventually let out of jail. That if you confessed and said, yep, was really sorry about that, then you were let go. But it was only the people who said, no, I'm not going to confess to that, I've never been a witch. Those are the people who ended up dying. For the most part. I mean, the large percentage of them did anyway.
No, you're dead right. That adds a nuance to the tragedy of these people who did the right thing, you know, who stuck up for their beliefs, all the things you're told to do in your life, and it ended badly for them. Which is why, you know, Arthur Miller's Crucible is such a great work of literature and plays, is because he tapped right into that kind of idea that these guys did the right thing, and by doing the right thing, they ended up at the end of a rope on a hill, you know, in colonial America. Right.
What's the and the population? You said under about 50,000, but it balloons up to 250 during the Halloween festivity, the month long festivities of Halloween. Is there in Salem? Is there any other time of year where they see a kind of bump like that, or I mean, I realize that they always kind of get a steady stream of tourists, but is this their big season? This October, you know, these 31 days of October.
Oh, massively. I mean, some businesses only open in October and can make their whole year in October.
Shut up.
Really? The past few years, they've been getting more of a year-round kind of tourist impulse, not just for the witch stuff, but for the maritime stuff. They have an amazing restaurant scene. They have the ninth largest art museum by area in the country. So they have, like, a lot of, like, kind of, you know, arrows in their holster to to pull tourists in. Just so happens their biggest one is October, which will never go away.
Wow. I realize, I mean, that's like there are state fairs that have that, right, where people open up a booth at a state fair and they can make their entire year in the 2 weeks that the state fair is open. No, I would never have guessed there are shops that are just open for 1 month in Salem.
Yeah, but what they're realizing is there's so many tourists coming to Salem over the course of a year that now they're starting to open longer. So if you go in the summertime, you'll still see the witch shops are still open. You might even see a haunted house open, the monster museum still open. So they're starting to realize that they can do this year-round as Salem grows and becomes more, even bigger in popular culture than it is now.
What's not cool in Salem? Are there rules or curbs that are either written or unwritten about how people are to, you know, behave or how they want tourists to be in Salem?
Yeah, and they're getting better and better at that, is figuring that, especially in October. Year-round, if you go any other time of year, there's not that many curbs. But in October, for instance, they have the burial ground, which is the old 17th century graveyard right in the middle of town there in Salem. And this year they had to, like, put a cap on how many people could be in the graveyard at a time, because it was just getting overrun, and people were like using the graves as, you know, picnic tables and climbing on them and doing all kinds of, you know, bad stuff to an actual historical artifacts. So they have to do that. There's on Halloween night, they have a curfew. I think it's around 10 p.m. that if you're not inside of a bar or inside of a party, you couldn't be on the streets. So they'll shoot fireworks in the air to kind of tell people, hey, the night's over, start heading to the train or start heading to your cars. So there, it's really...
At 10 p.m.?
Yeah, I believe it's at 10 p.m., yeah. It might be a little later than that, maybe 11, but yeah, they try to start pushing those 100,000 people to the train. Usually takes some time. So by midnight, there's nobody around on Halloween.
How ironic that they make everybody get off the streets of Salem before the witching hour.
Yeah, yeah, but they have to. Otherwise, it just gets bad. Yeah. It's really bad there.
Well, they got to get them out before the witching hour. Maybe that's when the real witching happens, after all the tourists leave. J.W. Ocker and Edgar Award-winning author, thank you so much. A Seasoned with the Witch, The Magic and Mayhem of Halloween in Salem, Massachusetts. It is now on my bucket list, thanks to you. Like, I didn't have enough on my bucket list.
Cool. Thanks, Ian.
All right, have a great night. In fact, I'm checking off one when I go to Roswell in a couple of weeks. I'll let you know about that coming up later on in November when I'll be back on Thanksgiving weekend on Coast to Coast AM. All right, so the story you're going to want to hear, the story you're never going to forget, The Man from the Train, next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.